are listening to Up to Me Radio, the best in inspirational talk radio. It's up to me.
Failure is not final. Your life is not through. Now with your testimony, God can use you too.
If you didn't know the pain of life. Good evening and welcome to part 4 of the launch Getting Prepared for College Education series on There Is Life After Layoff radio show. Now, tonight, in part 4 of our 7-part series, our focus will be on getting our students prepared to take the SAT or the ACT test. Now, when I think back about the time when I had to take the SAT, it was definitely something that we all dreaded back then, but it was no way around it. We had to work our way through it because you can't get into college without it. So we're going to face this thing head on and move forward with good resources and information. And a plus is that today, through the beauty of technology and with the proper preparation, your student can really equip themselves with the right tools and knowledge that will help them to meet their scoring goals. So get ready to take some great notes, because tonight the launch team is here once again to provide you with the tools that you will need to succeed. And my co-host and I, we want you to achieve your goals, which is one of the main reasons why we created this series, and it's especially for the parents of current high school students who might be overwhelmed with that whole getting my child prepared for college process, or it's also for that current undergraduate student, or even for that individual who might be thinking about going back to school to get an advanced degree. So once again, I advise you to get pen and paper, get your smartphone device, your iPad or whatever, and get ready to take some good notes, because we are set to launch. I'm Allie, your host, and it is always a pleasure to be your guide as I continue to follow this path in my journey of rediscovery and empowerment after being laid off. Now, There Is Life After Layoff was received as a vision from God, and it is my very transparent journey and proof of how facing my own truths has allowed me to grow in all areas of my life while walking in my purpose. Now, together with the support of my contributing co-hosts and special guests who helped to guide the conversation, our goal is to then encourage and empower you to push past the fear in your life as you explore new and inspiring opportunities to discover and then walk in your life's purpose. Now, in doing so, together we will support one another through this journey. So that is why I invite you to tune in on the conversation with us on the 2nd and 4th Tuesday of each month from 7 to 8 p.m. through the Up to Me Radio website at up2meradio.com. So with that said, I say thank you for listening and for joining us as we share with you our insights into issues related to not only the experience of being laid off, but also related to other life-altering events. Now, of course, you know that this platform works because of you, our faithful listeners. You are the ones who help to drive the show, so we always want to hear from you. But with the start of this brand-new series, we have a ton of great information, and time, of course, is of the essence. And so in order to make sure that we are able to give our expert consultants an adequate amount of time to provide you with all of the information, tools, and resources that will help you through this process, we are going to approach how we address we're going to change how we address your questions during this series. So what we're going to do is we're going to ask you to please email your questions or comments to me at thereislifeafterlayoff@gmail.com, and then we'll address those questions or comments on air during our question and answer segment throughout the series. And again, please email your questions or comments to me at thereislifeafterlayoff@gmail.com, and we certainly do look forward to hearing from you. So now we're ready to get started. And so for those of you who may be tuning in for the first time, it was back in January that we kicked off this series, the launch Getting Prepared for College Education, here on the show. And it, as I mentioned at the top of the show, it was created to help take some of that guesswork out of the college preparation process. So once again, I am honored to have joining me this evening a very knowledgeable expert. She has been my special guest co-host throughout this series, and so without further ado, I want to welcome to There Is Life After Layoff Radio, Ms. Deborah Williams. She is the CEO and founder of A Fresh Start LLC and creator of the Launch Soaring into Higher Education Consulting Program. Welcome, Deborah.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. I know we're looking forward to another great series show tonight.
Yes, this is a very deep session.
Yes, very important, very important.
Yes, it is.
So it is my pleasure to have you and your team as we try to kind of take the guesswork out of this overwhelming process and try to help make it a little less confusing for some of the parents out there or even those current students. So tonight we're actually going to be tackling the standardized testing aspect of getting prepared for college. So in just a moment, Deborah, you and I are going to be joined on air by one of your colleagues from the Launch team as we have a conversation about how we can help our students to get prepared to take the SAT or the ACT test, okay? But before we move forward, I also want to take a moment to remind those of you who are tuning in, please make sure that you stay tuned in for the entire show because that's when, at the end of the show, we'll be sharing with you once again all the details about how you can qualify to participate in the Launch Preparing for College Education giveaway, okay? It's a package valued at over $500, and it is being gifted to one of our faithful listeners by Deborah and her team of consultants. So, Deborah, before I turn it over to you to introduce and welcome your colleague on air, can you just please share a little bit with us about yourself and about the inspiration behind the Launch Soaring into Higher Education program?
Yes, thank you, Allie, first for giving us the opportunity to come on your show and discuss our passion and what we do to help students. How I started this is I was helping a friend of mine's twins searching for scholarships for college, which is very difficult for most parents if they do not have the time.
Right.
And once I started doing the research, that's when I started putting in, you know, just discussing with friends and my colleagues, which you'll meet, Tara, tonight, and others, how we can help other parents and students to research for scholarships. So I fell into it accidentally, but it's a passion of ours, and it's definitely a passion of mine. Because there are so many scholarships out there, and students and parents do not know how to research for certain priority scholarships or certain scholarships, or they do not have the time to research for scholarships.
Right. Right.
So this is what we do. We build a profile, as we discussed in one of our first series, and help the parents find scholarships according to their profile. And we have had great success with one of our students now. She called, and I missed her over the weekend, but she made it to the final list at one of a great college here in Georgia for a 4-year scholarship.
Wow.
So we know it does work, but it takes time, and it takes parents and students to develop that time to research and work with us on this process.
Right. And you know what? You said something, though. You said accidentally. I don't believe that it was by accident. How about you? You know that, right?
This is true. You're right. God put so many things in our path. You are so right. You are so right about that.
I believe it was not by accident. God led you to it. This is part of your plan. I really believe that.
Yeah.
So thank you for your obedience, you know?
Yeah. You know, regardless, we love what we do, and like I said before, this is a passion, and we want to make sure we put the word out there. That's why we are so appreciative to you giving us this opportunity for people to hear this.
Absolutely.
And find
it's
out
so
what
needed.
Everything is.
It's
it
so
is
needed.
So needed.
Yeah, and, you know, myself included, you know, being the parent of a high school sophomore, you know, I'm in that mode right now trying to, you know, get her ready and prepare for these type of things. And so this is helpful to me as well. And I know if it's helping me, it's going to help a lot of other people who are tuning in. So it's you know, I'm honored to have you, you know, doing this as well for my listeners. So
thank you.
Yes, absolutely. So at this time, you know, we're going to be interacting in conversation with one of your colleagues. So if you wanted to introduce her, and then we'll go ahead and get started with our conversation, that'll be great.
Right. Thank you. I would like to welcome one of my colleagues, which is Ms. Tara Avery. She is an educator, and she helps students prepare for the SAT and the ACT. And she's a mentor to several young ladies. She has an organization to help young ladies throughout Atlanta area. But Tara, like I said, is an educator, and this is one of her specialties. So
okay.
No further ado, here's Ms. Tara Avery.
Hey, Tara. Welcome.
Hi. Hello. Good evening. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for joining us, and thank you for, you know, lending us your time and your knowledge to, you know, share some of this great information with our listeners this evening. Thank you so much for that.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here.
Thank you. So we're going to jump right in. So tonight I'm going to be like that student asking questions or even that parent asking questions. So I'm just going to dive in and just, like, I don't know anything about the SAT, okay?
Okay.
And we're just gonna try to put out as much knowledge as we can. So, of course, first off, what exactly is the SAT and the ACT test? What is that all about?
Well, the SAT and the ACT.
You got it, Tara? Okay.
I'm sorry, yes. They are standardized tests used for college admissions and merit-based scholarships in the United States of America. Deborah?
Yes, and it's years of standardized testing. Like, you know, most of the kids start from elementary school, middle school, and high school. And they lead up to this big moment. And that's why a lot of parents do not understand, like, in the beginning when students start preparing for testing, what are they preparing for?
Right.
So then we start with the SATs and the ACT. Like Tara says, a standardized test, which is used for college admission. And it's a merit-based scholarship in the United States. And, you know, students use this to get into college.
Okay. So what is the difference between the two tests? You know, what exactly is the SAT versus the ACT? You know, what is that?
The difference between the two, as far as the SAT, it contains three sections, such as reading, math, with and without a calculator, and writing and language. The ACT contains four sections, which is reading, math, English, and science. Both also have an optional essay. So each section has a different format on the ACT compared to the SAT.
Okay. So you said optional essay, so they don't have to necessarily write the essay?
No. Tara, you want to speak on that?
Yes. When they first implemented the essay, it was part of the score, but some revisions came about, and the essay is now optional.
Oh, and wow, really? Wow.
It's optional, and the benefits of doing the essay, it gives the reviewers and the colleges a chance to look at your strengths, you know, as a writer and being able to stick to the topic. But personally, I think just from the way the essay was being scored, and, you know, students have various, you know, writing strengths,
mm-hmm.
The weight of the essay changed, and so now it's optional. However, if the students do decide to take the essay with the test, they do pay an additional fee to include the essay.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good to know. So in your this question is for both of you. In your expert opinion, would you suggest or advise that a student pay to take that, you know, add that option onto their testing? Or does it even really matter?
This is Tara speaking. I think it matters, preferably depending upon which school you are applying to,
okay.
And like what your major is going to be. Like if you're in the humanities or liberal arts,
mm-hmm.
or a school, you know, that requires it,
mm-hmm.
would they express emphasis on looking at your writing skills?
Got it.
But the pressure that came along with it initially is no longer there per se. If that makes
gotcha.
Sense.
Gotcha. So, like, for example, my daughter is more going into, like, film and video production, and where it's not so much, you know, it's not the liberal arts like you said. So, you know, that necessarily is not something that is really required for her, the type of school that she's looking to go to.
It may not be necessarily required, but if she's looking into, like, maybe writing films,
mm-hmm.
or producing,
okay,
or writing
gotcha.
Scripts, then that
gotcha.
Would be a strength for her
okay.
to demonstrate her skills in that aspect, because as she matriculates through that school, whatever school she attends, that will follow her.
Got
it. Open up other opportunities for her.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah, I would definitely suggest writing the essay as well.
Okay. Okay. All right. So, okay, when I went out there to look at getting my daughter registered to take an SAT, I saw these different types of SAT tests pop up, and one was an SAT 2 subject test. What is that?
The SAT 2, also known as the SAT subject test, is a one-hour multiple-choice test on 20 different topics, and very selective colleges require this test.
Okay.
A list of colleges that accept the ACT also 2, which is the ACT 2, can be found on the College Board website under the SAT subject test tab, which is under the SAT tab.
Okay, so a college would have to specify that they need this particular SAT?
If that's the college whichever college they're going to, they have to, research and see if that test
that's
is
the
required.
One. Okay, got it.
Mm-hmm.
Got it. Because
the college,
thoroughly
if there's
confused.
A list of colleges.
I was like, what is that?
Yeah, exactly. So the student need to read the school, admission requirements,
got it.
Before.
Okay. So how does a student decide which one that they should take? Is there one that's more, better than the other, or do most schools just accept both, or?
Tara?
Students are increasingly taking both the SAT and the ACT,
mm.
especially since there have been changes with the SAT in 2016.
Okay.
The SAT was a little harder for some students than others. But due to those changes, it makes it easier for students to prep for both tests concurrently and earn competitive scores on both. Because most, for example, I grew up in Alabama, and the test that we heard about more was the ACT. I have very few friends who talked about the SAT. But I started teaching, and when I moved to Georgia and started teaching, I heard more about the SAT versus the ACT.
Hmm.
So some states push the test more one test over the other. However, all schools accept both scores, which is like what Deborah mentioned before, checking with the school to see which test they require. But the best way to decide if taking the SAT, ACT, or both tests is right for you as a student, the first thing you want to do is take a full-length practice test for each one.
Mm-hmm.
And then you would like to look at your strengths and weaknesses because, again, as Deborah mentioned in one of the previous questions, it's all about the format. And since the content and style of the SAT and ACT are very similar now, factors like how you handle time pressure and what types of questions you find most challenging will help you determine which test is the better fit for you.
Okay.
So, and there's also a quiz that students can take on the Princeton Review website, PrincetonReview.com College SAT. And there's a little quiz you can take, and it'll help you kind of decipher which one is best for you. But I also suggest the students to take both and kind of weigh it out from there and then make a decision which one to continue to pursue.
So then that just kind of narrows down the one that they're going to do better on, and this way they're not, pursuing one that's really more difficult for them versus the other one. So that kind of just helps them be able to focus on one particular standardized test, correct?
Yes, because as I mentioned, like some states push one test over the other, but you may find that you may be a better test taker with the SAT versus the ACT or vice versa. Again, it's all about the time pressure because the times are different.
Mm.
And then how challenging you find those questions.
Gotcha.
So
exactly.
That's why it's good to take the practice test, take both and then weigh your options from there and then focus on building your score on the one you do the best on during your first attempt.
Okay, Nick, that's a good segue into my next question. What exactly do those scores mean?
The SAT has three sections, which is reading, comprehension, math, and writing, and an essay, each of which are worth up to 800 points.
Mm-hmm.
so perfect. A perfect score is 2,400. The ACT has four sections, which is English, math, reading comprehension, and science, with an optional essay section. The scores are averaged after they tabulated, so a perfect ACT score is 36. So you see a difference. Mm-hmm. One is 2,400 and one is 36.
Mm-hmm.
And the general standard for a good SAT score is 600 or above in each section, depending on their academic transcript and their extracurricular activities. And an 1,800, of course, is higher, should gain your admittance in many highly regarded colleges. But the average score of all SAT test takers is 1,600.
Okay, so that's the average, you said.
Yeah, but when you hear the 1,800s and 1,600s, that's awesome for those students.
Okay, okay.
And as far as the ACT, the 36, because it seems it's so high and then one is so low, but, you
right.
know, when they get a score of a 24, they still did well on that test.
Right, because
but they
of
said
the,
that
yeah.
between 21 and 22, you know, based on average for the ACT, depending on the academic transcript as well.
Okay, okay. So what, in your expert opinion, when is the best time for a student to start really concentrating on taking these SAT or ACT tests?
My opinion, for this is Deborah, I would say starting around the 9th and 10th grade. I'm just meaning far is even just getting their mind prepared. The first best time for them, they always say, is the junior year.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say the 10th grade at least, because that would get them prepared, their mind prepared for what they have to take. So it'll be less pressure from them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the longer they wait, the worse, I think it's the worst for them. Or some students may work better under pressure, but you would not want your child to wait that long, like the senior year.
Right.
Because they might have to test more than once. So the second test sitting should be maybe the fall of the junior year. Then there is no rule about how many times you should take in a standard test, but experts recommend that they take the ACT or the SAT two or three times during their junior and senior year.
Okay, okay. Yeah, because my daughter, she took an SAT prep class, and she's in her sophomore year, and so that allowed her to take the PSAT, so she's actually wanting to take it, you know, in the spring. She wants to go ahead and sit for one of the tests so that she can kind of start, you know, seeing where she falls. So I think that's
mm-hmm.
we're on a good track then, I guess.
Yeah, that sounds really good.
Yes. Yeah, so and then that'll allow her to be able to, because that was going to be my next question, how many times should they plan to take it? So you said on the average of 2 to 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good, good, good. So let me ask you this. What particular area do colleges focus more on the math or reading, or do they place more emphasis on the grammar portion, or is it just kind of like depending on the major or the type of school, what do they focus on?
The section schools basically focus on the most, it depends on which school they're applying for as far as their sections. For example, if you're applying to a humanities or liberal arts school, like let's say your daughter, the focus would be on their verbal section, like we were talking about writing, but their verbal section. However, that does not mean that the other sections are not considered.
Okay.
But the goal is to do well on all of the sections for the ACT and SATs because they represent you as a whole student.
Mm.
So I wouldn't say there's just one particular part that they need to focus on or, you know, what they're looking at, but that it still boils down to that score.
Gotcha. Okay, okay. So how does a student even go about starting to prepare to take these tests? Where do they start?
Tara, do you want to go with that or you want me to go?
Yeah, I'll go with it.
Okay.
So they start preparing, but as an educator and a teacher, you start preparing the first day you hit that classroom in ninth grade, but specifically, say if a student plans to take the SAT or the ACT in the fall, they should begin studying around midsummer. And if you're scheduled to take it in the spring, like some students are taking tests now,
mm-hmm.
they should start studying like maybe during like Christmas break, winter break is a great time to start. you know, to start studying, because you want to give yourself time to become really familiar with the questions and, you know, to strengthen those areas that are weak.
Right.
And then I suggest that winter break, if you're doing it in the spring, because you have less distractions, because there's a lot of pressure closing out a semester, especially for juniors and seniors, you know, as they're preparing to close out that final semester of that year. The best time to start preparing is when they take the PSAT.
Mm-hmm.
You just mentioned your daughter has taken that test.
Mm-hmm.
Many students don't take it seriously, but I would encourage students and parents to, like, really stress the importance of taking it seriously, because that will give you a very, very close report or score of what you would actually make if you were taking that test. And then it also helps you narrow down, oh, I'm good in this area, but I need to really focus on my vocabulary, or I need to really
right.
focus on my math, or I need to focus on my verbal understanding, because, again, the questions can be a little challenging and tricky, and it's all about reading. So that's another key thing, is to read, like no skipping, no scamming, but scanning. And then, again, to maximize your instructional time in the classroom.
Right,
it may
right.
seem boring at times, but it really, really pays off in the end. And I've heard several stories about, oh, I should have listened.
Yeah. I know, right? My daughter was so happy that, and I was so glad that her school actually started offering the SAT prep in school for credit, because it really did help her and gave her a lot of tools and resources on how to approach the test, and it gave her a good idea of where she stood, and, you know, like you said, in the different disciplines, you know, the math versus the reading or what have you. So it gave us a place to start for her to study, you know. I wish all of the schools offered that, because, you know, it costs money to take those prep courses, and so for it to be part of the school curriculum is really great, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And most schools do offer it now. I know at my former school they started offering it. The key thing is making sure the students who really, 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 really want to be in there are in there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because
absolutely.
They can really maximize on being in there. And you also have some who partner with the school and come after school. So that's another way to plan. And they offer scholarships as well.
Wow, that's awesome. That's awesome. So I'm going to address this, and then we're going to go and take a break. How can a student register to take the SAT or the ACT? What do they need to do?
The students have two registration options. They have an online registration and postal mail registration, which is the regular way, just mail it at the post office.
Mm-hmm.
To register your child for SAT online, they will go to the College Board website. And for the ACT, they would go to the ACT.org. To register your child by mail, your child must get an SAT or ACT paper registration guide from the college guidance office at his or her school. And most students would register online, though, majority
right.
of them, because, you know, they're so technical savvy these days,
right.
they do not want paper.
Exactly. And it's just quicker and it's just more convenient, because then you could pay your fee and all of that.
Exactly.
Online without having to worry about mailing a check and all that kind of stuff. So
correct.
Yeah. And you know what? The College Board website is really, really great. They have lot of resources on that website that I wish I had back in the day. But I'm dating myself. We didn't even have those computers back then. Ooh, I just
no, it was paper.
Oh my God! I just dated myself. Isn't that horrible? Ah. Oh, my gosh. So
you can share your knowledge.
Exactly. You know, but my thing is, with all this technology, there's no reason for them not to be able to prepare adequately, you know. They just have such an advantage over what we had back then, you know, or didn't have back then. So, you know, there's no excuse. So at this point, if you guys will hang in there with me for a minute, we are going to pause to take a very quick station break, and then when we return, we're going to continue to explore how our students can get prepared for taking the SAT or the ACT with our launch experts, Deborah and Tara. So please remember to stay tuned, because at the end of the show we'll be sharing with you all the details about how you can qualify to win and complete the Launch Soaring into Higher Education Scholarship Consultation Package, valued at over $500. So you're listening to There Is Life After Layoff Radio, so please stay tuned.
I wasn't prepared to be a caregiver to mom. I had no idea how hard it would be and what I would need to know. Things I never thought of, like how to improve her mood and ways for me to stay positive. Luckily, I found the Caregiving Resource Center from AARP. It had articles about the basics, but also information about the hurdles I was facing. Caregiving Resource Center at aarp.org/caregiving. Articles, tips, and tools to help you both care for your loved one and care for yourself. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
All right, we're back. If you just tuned in, I'm your host, Allie, and I'm joined by my special guest co-host, Deborah Williams, along with one of her expert consultants, Tara Avery, and you're listening to the Launch Preparing for College Education series on There Is Life After Layoff radio show. And it's broadcast through UpToMeRadio.com. That's up, the number 2MeRadio.com, and we encourage you to join us every second and fourth Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8 p.m., and you can also follow me on my blog at www.thereislifeafterlayoff.com. And tonight we are in part four of our series, and we're discussing preparing for the SAT and the ACT, okay? And if you have questions pertaining to this subject, please email them to me at thereislifeafterlayoff@gmail.com, and we will address them during our question and answer segment on another show. So we're going to pick up where we left off, and right before the break, we were talking about how students can actually register to take the SAT and ACT. So now that they're registered, how much does it cost to take these tests? I know you guys mentioned earlier that there's a separate fee for doing the optional essay portion.
The registration fee, the normal fee for each administration of the test you register for, is $60 for the SAT, $46 if they do not want to take the essay. So it's $60 for SAT, $46 without the essay. The ACT cost is $62.50, $46 without the essay. And also there is a late charge, the charge if you register after the deadline, which they need to find that out. And the late charge for the SAT is $29, and ACT cost is $29.50. So I don't know where the 50 cents is coming from.
I know. They got to think for 50 cents.
Yeah.
So that's that if you register after that deadline, registration deadline. They tack that on
right
on top of that fee of $60 or $62.50.
Yeah, okay. So they would have to definitely find out whatever, you know, school they go to or what area they are located, because it's different times,
okay,
you know, for their registration for that college.
Okay. And actually, that's not too bad. I think it was more expensive when I took it back in the day. I don't know. I don't remember.
I can't even remember paying.
You know,
oh, yeah.
I'm getting ready to say I don't even remember, so don't give me the line tonight. So here's a good one. I mentioned that my daughter took an SAT prep course, but what other courses should a student plan to take or try to take before they even sit down to take the SAT or ACT? Is there any specific courses that you would recommend?
Well, we found as a group, Tara, I'm elaborating. You can come on, follow after me, because we thought this was really, really cool. Some schools, prior to graduation, as far as foreign languages, they will love students to take foreign languages, especially Latin, because
okay,
it deals with the origin of words. And AP students, which, you know, we hear this all the time with our students, which is advanced placement courses,
mm-hmm,
any writing workshops classes, and SAT, ACT prep classes, if this school offers it as far as elective courses.
Mm-hmm.
But, Tara, you can elaborate some more for me.
Oh, I was going to pretty much say what you said, and I would like to encourage students. Some students kind of shy away from advanced placement classes,
mm-hmm,
but actually that is a great place to become more familiar with the type of questions that are asked on these standardized tests.
Hmm. Okay.
Because, as you know, the tests build up, as they ever say, the standardized tests start, you know, elementary, middle, and high school, but they get a little more specific and particular in high school. And with the advanced placement courses, they give you those critical thinking questions.
Yeah.
The questions are formatted very similar to what you would see on the SAT or ACT. Plus, if you make a certain score on these advanced placement tests, it also can give you college credit.
Right.
And also getting into some honors courses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want your main core courses, which is the ELA, which is language arts, math, science, and social studies. Some students, you know, I think now with Common Core, you have to do it all 4 years. But I know at one point you could take math 3 years and be done.
Mm-hmm.
But the key would be to maximize on all those courses, the core courses, along with those courses that Deborah mentioned. And some students kind of shy away from the writing classes, but they also help you prepare for the SAT and ACT, not just because of the essay, but also some of the questions that are presented in those classes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They are very similar to what's on those tests. And most teachers, which I also taught courses like that, I would specifically bring in questions from those two tests to help students prepare. And my lesson plans.
Okay. And you know what? It's funny you mentioned that because my daughter is now taking an honors American Lit class, and she was a little fearful because she has always kind of felt she wasn't a strong writer, but the type of teacher that she has, she absolutely loves this class now. And he has them writing all types of essays, argumentative and comparison, and this. And it's, I know that this class is really going to help her on this SAT when she gets ready to take it, or the ACT, because he's really making them think. And she absolutely loves the class because he's a very dynamic and very, you know, interesting guy, if you will, for lack of a better way to describe him. But she said that he is just, and she comes home every day excited about something that he shared with them. And I'm like, oh, yes, thank you, yay, you know. So she,
well,
I think.
Most English teachers are.
Yes, yeah, so she's really, I think this is going to help her do well on these tests. So I'm thankful for that because her classmates who had taken his class prior to this semester was filling her head, oh, I hate it, da-da-da. I said, Imani, don't judge by somebody else's standards. Give the man a chance and see. And she's like, Mommy, you're right because I love him. I'm like, see, I told you. Just depends.
And most of the time, that comes from the resistance from not wanting to work hard.
Right.
But
exactly.
But they'll appreciate it in the end. Because,
yes,
again,
well, she's appreciating
it.
She's appreciating it, and I'm glad. I'm glad. So I'm like, thank you. Ah, I just want to send that man an email and say thank you, thank you, thank you for being interesting, you know. So, but anyway, so how long should a student plan to study for the SAT?
Tara?
Well, it all depends. It all depends on when and how you study.
Okay.
So, and I say that because some students have test anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
Some students can hear something once and they're good, you know, just need to review. Some students need to really sit down with a plan, a structure, and focus on, you know, one section at a time. So significantly, like 3 months is a good period of time because
okay.
it allows you to cover all necessary study material
mm-hmm.
and at a comfortable pace. Like
okay.
Deborah mentioned, some students work well under pressure, but some students don't. So it's advisable to work at a comfortable pace.
Right.
And successful ACT and SAT study requires you to set a study schedule and stick to it.
Mm.
Because, you know,
okay.
high schoolers can be very busy with extracurricular activities, work, et cetera. But if you want to, like, maximize that test and the money that you're paying for that test, you want
right.
to get a schedule and stick to it. And you want to be careful of not studying too early. Like, the preparation begins in ninth grade, like Deborah said, because, you know, you're in school every day, you maximize that. But when you begin to specifically, you know, get materials for these particular tests, you don't want to start too soon because you may end up, you know, run the risk of losing your focus or forgetting information. So right. I said okay. The significant timeline would be 3 months.
Okay. Okay. That sounds pretty on point. Yeah. Okay. So do you guys suggest that a student partner with a personal SAT coach, or do you, you know, what do you suggest? Or I guess, you know, maybe if it's the student is a stronger student, like you just mentioned about depending on how well they study, how can a personal SAT coach help a student get that ideal score? What do you guys recommend?
This is Deborah. I would say, first of all, the student and the parent needs to know their weakness and their strength.
Okay.
Some students may feel intimidated by, you know what, mom or dad, I do not need a mentor, a tutor for this. I have this. And plus, you know your child's strength and weakness.
Mm-hmm.
But what I would do suggest, too, it just depends on that child, and you may want them to sit with a tutor maybe once, you know, just
okay.
to go over the format so they could be prepared what the format looks like, and maybe just teach them how to relax. Because regardless, they still panic or have those anxiety attacks just before. And this coach could even help them. They may be great with test taking, but they may have a problem with still test taking as far as their anxiety attacks.
Got it.
I would say it depends on the student and the parents, because they know their child's strengths and weaknesses.
Gotcha.
Because okay. if you throw them out there and say, okay, I need you to study, and a lot of parents do that, and a lot of students are not even, they will pay all this money for a mentor slash coach or tutor, and the student hasn't learned a thing. That's why I think it's best to decide with your child.
Right. You know, and you know, I think another good strategy would be have the student sit for the particular test at least once, and then
yes.
go from there.
Determine.
And make a determination based on how well they did or didn't do, you know, and then you can make an educated decision, you know, an informed decision, if you will, on, you know, whether or not you need to solicit the help of an outside person, you know, mentor or coach. So I think that Go ahead.
And it also depends on how they were the night before, you know, if they were sick.
Right.
If something stressed them out prior, that's another way to determine, because when they took the test the first time, totally different than the second time. And
right.
you know how some students are just very tired. They did not prepare. So maybe you would have to, like you're saying, see how the first one was, but also observe what they did the night before. Because you want them to get enough rest.
Right, right. Good advice. That's really good advice. What are some good tools or resources, you know, i.e. website, books, you know, or study guides that you guys can recommend to help a student prepare for these tests?
This is Tara speaking.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there are several resources, and as you mentioned before, like way more available than were before, and I think I'm a little less mature than you all when it comes to timing, but I didn't even have all these resources that are available now. And there are resources like on College Board, you mentioned that is a wonderful site, Princeton Review, also at ACT.org, Khan Academy, Kaplan, which is Kaplan, McGraw-Hill, and Princeton Review. They have books which you can purchase, you know, Amazon or Barnes & Noble Bookstore. You have a site called powerscore.com and then blog.prepscholar.com and fourtest.com. And that one particularly is for the ACT. Some of these sites offer you free PDF printables, and then others you take it online and you can get a score right then and an analysis and a breakdown of, you know, what you should focus on and what you should not focus on. No, what you should focus on more, and then what you can just kind of brush up on later.
Okay. And you know what? I would love for you guys to compile a list of some of those resources, and I'd love to be able to, offer that on, you know, one of the websites so that people can access that information. So I know that, Deborah, you mentioned that you had – someone that you had a good experience with, a parent, one of your colleagues, did you want to bring
right.
her into the conversation? And
oh, yes.
Okay.
We're going to go ahead and bring Pamela Schuyler Miles, and she had some information she liked to share with her experience with her daughters, with the SATs or the ACTs.
Okay, Pam,
hi.
Are you with us? Hey, Pam.
Yes. Hi, ladies. How are you?
I'm fine.
Hey,
thank
Pamela.
You.
Hi. Well, my experience was rather hectic because I had three girls that were in college all at once. So I gave College Board ACT a ton of money, and everybody took the test at least three times.
Oh, wow.
And then there were those that took one SAT and two ACTs, and it was done in reverse order.
Mm.
And I find that each child was different. One of
okay.
my daughters did extremely well on the SAT.
Okay.
While the other one didn't do so well. So then we had her repeat the SAT. She still didn't do good.
Right.
And then she took the ACT and she did well.
Ah.
So it basically depends on the child. And the tests really monitor their strengths and weaknesses when it comes to the courses that they've taken in class.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay, so
you did the ACT.
To...
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
We did the prep classes where we were in classes on Saturdays for like 8 hours. They were given the books and the prep tests and everything. So that was really helpful because it got them to understand, you know, how to take a standardized test such as that and to sit for a long period of time because those tests are rather lengthy.
Yes, absolutely. So when they took the test, and you talked about the length of time, do they give them a break in between or is it just straight through taking the test?
I'm trying to remember. I think they gave them a little break maybe midway, but it wasn't much. It was maybe like 10 minutes or something like that.
Okay.
But it wasn't anything lengthy because they're told to bring snacks with them because they're not going to be able to go out and get anything to eat.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Wow. Okay, so that's good to hear from another parent, you know, what works well. But like you know, Deborah mentioned and Tara mentioned that, you know, it just depends on your child. So you just got to let them kind of take it, you know, just to see where they fall and then make an informed decision on which test is, you know, best for them, you know.
Yeah, because some of them are not, you know, everybody's different. Even as adults, some of us are better test takers than others.
Mm-hmm.
Some of us get stressed out. I mean, the thing that was hilarious to me was that if you put your name on your name correctly on the SAT, you're given 200 points.
I heard that. I know,
so
I heard
I'm
that.
So I'm like, okay.
That you just out the box you get 200 points.
Right.
Oh goodness, yes. So thank you, Pam, for sharing your experience and with your daughters with us. It's always good to get practical examples and tips from someone who's been there, done that. You know.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you. So we're at a point in time where I want to kind of go into our question and answer segment and. We may not have time to get to all of them, but I do have one particular question, guys, that I want to ask because this has kind of been a controversy throughout the years that I've kind of heard. Why are the standardized tests so difficult? And with that being said, do you all feel that these tests are culturally biased in any way?
Well, this is Deborah. Maybe all three of us can mention this.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm only speak from my personal experience. I think it's a lack of preparation. I really do not feel the test is that difficult. And I'm just being so real. Is that I wasn't prepared. I did not prepare myself. Like you're saying, Nell, and we're discussing, there is so much information out there for these students to prepare for these tests. It's just the lack of time that they take to prepare for them.
Got it.
And they'll say it's difficult because they just didn't read the question or they may read part of the question and it's not completed. So they just jump at that answer. So it may be difficult for some of them to comprehend because they do not comprehend it in the beginning because they're not reading. And I'm only saying this as well as being a college instructor is when I have the students in the classroom and we asked them to read the question, just one question. Majority of them couldn't even interpret the question because they couldn't finish it. They just can't sit still long enough just to read one question.
Oh, Wow.
So when you're placing them there to take this SAT or ACT, are they prepared
to
take
sit
it?
There. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And to sit there. It's not a lack of time. It's a lack, to me, of preparation. That's just my opinion from what I've seen with college students after the fact.
Okay.
It's reading.
That's interesting. Yeah, that's interesting. So let me ask you this then. What if a student doesn't do well on the SAT, ACT, can they still get into a good college? I know that a lot of students, like you, we all said, some test well and some don't. And, you know, would this be the one thing that keeps them out of college if they don't do well?
No.
Okay.
This is Deborah, and Tara can answer to this, and Pamela as well. It depends on what college they are going to. They can take it more than once. Some of the colleges, they do, if their scores was low, they may put them in, some schools may call it, like English, a remedial English class. And that means a lot of them have to test out of those classes to get them in the appropriate class they need to get into for a freshman or sophomore year. It wouldn't usually stop them, no. But it depends, because each college gives you their score that they need to enter that college. So if this is the college they want to go to and their scores does not meet their standards, then yes.
Okay.
So that's why we also encourage our students, you need to have more than one choice, just in case.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Okay. Wow. Yeah.
This is Tara, briefly. Back to the question, just briefly about the difficulty of the test. We mentioned about not being good test takers. But the thing about test anxiety, it doesn't show up just on the SAT or ACT.
Mm-hmm.
So you know you have anxiety prior to that. So you should have practices in place to help you assist with that.
Right.
Also, students, it could be difficult because of the pressures students put on themselves. And Deborah just made a good point as far as, like, narrowing down your choices of schools and put them on, you know, different tiers. Okay, you may want this Ivy League, but what's your second best choice, your third best choice?
Right.
And then begin to prepare yourself for that. And as far as getting into that school, even if you have to start at a community college, the way the systems are set up now, especially like with the University Systems of Georgia, you can go to community college, and most of the schools, they feed into, for lack of words, to the university or college that you want to go to.
Mm-hmm.
You still get the credits that you need. So if you spend 2 years at a community college, once you get to that university, you'll be qualified as a junior as long as you have your credit. But as Deborah said, it's really about preparation. And her we talk about it before, her being a college professor and me teaching high school English so long, you question the students and they say, oh, I haven't taken it yet. And I'm like, you know, it's senior year spring. You can't wait until now to take the
test.
Right. And the other part is reading. Deborah mentioned it's all about reading.
Yeah.
That's the difficult part is they don't want to. Everyone wants a shortcut, but as I tell them,
there's no shortcut.
You can't use text message talk for these tests. You have to read everything. There's strategies to reading, but you have to read because the tests are set up to quote unquote trick you.
Absolutely. So yes, it's a lot of good information, ladies, and I'd love to have you guys compile some of those resources, and like I said, we'll add it to one of the websites. So thank you for joining me this evening and for sharing your knowledge about getting ready to take that SAT and ACT. It's really been eye-opening, and I've taken some notes myself of things. I learned some things tonight that I didn't already know, so thank you for that. And I look forward to the remaining part of the series that we have left, because I know that we have really helped a lot of people who are tuning in, so I thank you for that, the whole entire launch team. So Deborah, it's time for us to talk about the giveaway. So once again, yes, I'm happy. Woo-woo. So what can I mention that through the generosity of Deborah and her team, the launch Soaring into Higher Education team, we're offering one of our faithful listeners the opportunity to qualify or to win a complete scholarship consultation package valued at over $500. So it's easy to do that, and you know, it's very simple, and I'll explain to you that in a minute. But Deborah, tell us briefly, what does that package include?
This package will include us discussing with the winner and their parents a profile. We will set up a profile for you and your child, well, for your child, and we will research five scholarships, and that can range from $500 to $20,000.
Wow.
And what we would do is we'll research that for you. We will build the scholarship based on their profile.
Okay.
And that gives them a lot of options, and we will be their mentor for that process as well. So they will have someone they can always talk to during that process of those five scholarships that we give them. There's no guarantee, and I must say that, there's no guarantee that they win, but as far as the scholarships amounts, but it's a guarantee that we need from them to be dedicated to complete the package, and as far as applying for these scholarships.
Wow, that's a win-win, if you ask me. So it's real easy. Guys, who, you know, you're listening to this series, you know, on the second and fourth Tuesdays of the month since we started, you can go back and listen to it. Just listen, and, you know, at the end of each show, we are revealing a secret word that when you put them together, it spells out a catchphrase, and if you watch Wheel of Fortune, you know how that works. So you could go back and listen to the previous show on a recorded podcast, so you don't necessarily have to listen to the live recording, so it's really simple. And at the end of our seventh show, that is scheduled to air on April 24th, all you have to do is email that correct catchphrase to thelaunchgiveaway@gmail.com, along with your contact information, and you will qualify to be, you have your name in a drawing to win this scholarship consultation package. So it is very easy. Just listen. That's all we ask you to do. So now, Deborah, we're at that point. What is this week's secret word?
The secret word is you. I thought you guys would like that. The secret word is you, Y-O-U.
All right. You heard it. And thanks for that sound effect, Deborah. That was funny.
You're welcome.
So now you have four out of the six words to put together. And if you missed the prior week's words, go back and listen to the recorded podcast on uptomeradio.com, up2meradio.com. And so we're getting ready to close out another great episode. And so I thank Deborah and Tara, along with Pam, who joined us this evening. Thank you for being a part of this wonderful series. I look forward to the next one.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. And so I ask you to please remember to tune in for this show on every second and fourth Tuesday. The next part in this series will air on Tuesday, March 27th. That's part five, and we'll be preparing for the college education. Excuse me, we'll be preparing our students for the scholarship interview process, okay, during that particular segment. And you're going to want to tune in for that one. It's very important that they interview well. So don't forget to listen to all of past recorded podcasts, as I mentioned, on the UpToMeRadio.com website. And you can catch us on iTunes and Stitcher. All you have to do is search for Up to Me Radio. And please remember to follow me on my blog at ThereIsLifeAfterLayoff.com. And don't forget to follow us on social media. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at AllieWard45. And you can follow me on Up to Me Radio you can follow Up to Me Radio on Twitter at Up to Me Radio, and please remember to like us on Facebook by searching for There Is Life After Layoff, and Up to Me Radio can be found on Facebook at Up to Me Radio as well. And before we close out, I do want to take a quick moment to give a birthday shout out to my beautiful daughter Amani, who will be celebrating her 16th birthday on tomorrow. I want to say that I love you, and I'm so proud of you, and your daddy and I are so blessed and thankful that God has allowed us to be your parents. And I hope that your birthday is blessed, and I love you very much. And so on behalf of myself and the There Is Life After Layoff radio team, I say thank you for joining us on this journey. And we have some very exciting shows planned for you this year, so please stay tuned as we remain faithful and obedient to what God has for us to do in the lives of others as vessels of change. And so until next time, we continue to urge you to be encouraged. And yes, although it may be hard to walk away from something, especially when you don't know what you're walking towards, just know that when God is in it, all things are possible and new. And continue to join us on this journey and take a leap of faith past the fear in your life. Know that the bigger the obstacle, the bigger the blessing. But most of all, remember, there is life after layoff. Thank you and good night.
Failure is not final. Your life is not through. Now with your testimony, God can use you too. If you didn't know the pain of life, wouldn't know the joy of life and how God brings you through. No need for complaining, just look at this, it's just training to be ready, what God has for you. Tell yourself,
I'm not giving up.
No,
I'm not giving
in you, Lord, I have my faith in, even when it seems when your breakthrough will begin. Known has come from you alone.